from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, this marks the third continent from which this broadcast has emanated. That's so exciting. Again, I'm feigning radio excitement for your listening place, but it is actually, because it's evening here in London, England. Imagine. Somewhere in the same city, Christiane Amanpour is sitting and talking on CNN right now. I just feel it. But I'm here, and, you know, it's interesting to note that although so many things are different in different parts of the world, so many things, that we have so much, we really do have so much in common. We really are the same people. Down deep where it really doesn't count. Case in point, you might think that Yogi Berra, the former Yankee manager, current ex-Yankee personality, is a quintessential American type. And, you know, he's famous for his malapropisms and other misunderstandings, deliberate or innocent, of the English language. If you're not familiar with them, I recommend Larry King's After Dinner speech. He'll recount many of them for you at length, in detail. For a price. But and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, I was in my little family and I were in Dublin, Ireland this week. And thanks to Sean O'Quigley for giving us all a cold. And anyway, we were in this lovely hotel having afternoon tea, as you do when you're starving and you've just flown in. And so downstairs in the Lord Mayor's room, having afternoon tea, and I asked the young lady who was ostensibly there to serve, excuse me, because I didn't fancy the what they called there the dainty sandwiches. You know, there's a macho thing about eating dainty sandwiches. I don't know. I said, excuse me, what flavor ice creams do you have? And her reply, ladies and gentlemen, was, today? Hello, welcome to the show. As Yogi said, when you see a fork in the road, take it.
When I brought you home to mama a long, long time ago, mama said, son, oh, don't you ever let her go. But I didn't listen. I just didn't know better. When she walked out the door like a fool, I just let her. Better do something, better do it right quick. Living without her, oh, just making me sick. And when I find her, I'm gonna get down on my knees. Oh, and say to my baby, please, please, please. Mama was right, mama was right, I know it now. To my mama, I made a big mistake. Now I'm paying the price. I got me a big heartache. Must have been crazy. Oh, what was I thinking of? I don't even know the ABCs of love. Mama was right. Mama was right. I feel the pain. I keep calling my baby's name. And when I find her, I'm gonna get down on my knees. Oh, she gave me everything a man could ever need. Mama was right, I know it now. Oh, mama was right. Gotta find my baby somehow. Somebody help me. I'm hurting in my heart. Gotta find my baby. Make a brand new start. Oh, baby, I need you. I need you back.
for dead. Baby, 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 I'm so cold and alone. Baby, 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 I need you to come back home. Oh, baby, I got tears in my eyes. Oh, how I need you, little girl.
Speak your name at night. Oh, when the world steals away my sight. Oh, you're the warmth inside my bones. You're the circle in.
love that it blows my brains out. You need something better than the bacon and eggs, the creaking in the walls and the banging in the bed. You give me so much love that it blows my brains out. Summer rain.
From outside the bubble. Yes, it's exciting to say that. From London, England, ladies and gentlemen. Home of winter rain, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And some news from outside the bubble that would never get inside the bubble if I weren't here, because I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't be looking for this. The there's a counterpart to the American Legion in the United Kingdom called the Royal British Legion. It's royal. They have a queen. They bow down to her, of course. And they sell poppies every year, I guess, to benefit, what, veterans? Something like that. The Royal British Legion has stopped supplying pins with its poppies because it fears compensation claims from injured members of the public. See, it's not just America where this stuff is going on. A number of Legion branches across the United Kingdom have instructed members not to use pins to attach the paper poppies for health and safety reasons, claiming that they could cause pain if people accidentally stab themselves with them or damage workplace machinery if they fell off. Pin in the machine, ladies and gentlemen. Pin in the machine. So I guess you're supposed to what?
Does it say over here?
Does it say how you're supposed to attach the paper poppies to your clothing now?
Buttonhole.
Buttonhole?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, I don't have a buttonhole. We were told we were supposed to give children the pins for health, not to give children the pins for health and safety reasons, and we should give them a sticker badge instead. It's something we're incessantly aware of for adults, increasingly aware of for adults as well. Now we tend to slot the poppy into buttonholes without using a pin. If people do insist on a pin, says a spokesman for the Royal British Legion, I will make sure the sharp end is stuck firmly into the material to minimize any risk of injury. I would favor the introduction of a safety pin in the future. So-called because it's an actual pin. And also, the BBC, under attack for other reasons, is now under attack for this reason. Dozens of its history, science, and wildlife programs have started using metric instead of traditional British pounds, inches, feet, and miles, ounces, and stuff. The switch to metric is taking place in entertainment programs as well, such as Robot Wars on BBC television and Changing Rooms. Uh-oh. Changing Rooms goes metric. The trend has prompted complaints from viewers who say they are unable to understand metric measurements. There are also campaigners keen, as they say here, to keep the old traditional measurements. This is this thing when you start going into Europe. This is what happens. This is the danger. Now, more important news from outside the bubble for your bubblicious listening pleasure. A conservative member of parliament who has just returned from serving as a reservist soldier in Iraq believes that British troops will be fighting a counter-terrorist war there for the next, any guesses? Hands? Use both of them. 10 years, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Andrew Morrison, a former surgeon commander in the Royal Navy who has returned from 6 weeks in southern Iraq. He did 6 weeks. He must know somebody. He must be somebody. He said that senior British officials believe that coalition forces would be in the country beyond 2014. Plenty of time for us all to enlist. He praised British troops for their excellent efforts. He said senior officers feared that there was no clear endgame strategy for an eventual withdrawal. He's just a Brit. What does he know? They have been avid, have they not, ladies and gentlemen, in telling us this was not going to be another... No way this is another Vietnam, even when Donald Rumsfeld used the words long, hard slog to describe what's ahead of us. And remember last week when he had the dictionary definition of slog from the Oxford English Dictionary? A listener emailed me to point out that the chosen definition that Rumsfeld used was slog as a verb, even though in the sentence he had said a long, hard slog. Said listener recommended looking at the nounular definitions of slog, which, of course, were quagmire-ish in import. Anyway, so they've been avid in assuring us that this was not going to be another Vietnam. But I think after today, we have to ask, yeah, but is it going to be another Somalia, you see? Because, well, you saw what happened. I wonder at the linguistic oddity that President Bush, he's done it on so many more than one occasions that it's not just a happenstance. When he's reassuring us that the good news outweighs the bad, the bright side of Iraq and Afghanistan, he always says, we're making good progress. Now me, I'm of the cast of mind that I immediately wonder, what's bad progress? What would that be? What? I thought progress is good. You know, I was raised an American. Progress is good. Now it's good progress. So that's like we're instituting some good improvements, and pretty soon we'll be on a good upward side of the curve, you see. But there's more. There's so much more. Burying the lead, a listener writes. An article in the November 2, 2003 edition of a Bangor, Maine newspaper about a local resident and co-founder of the U.S.-Iraq Business Alliance refers to the timing of the founding of the U.S.-Iraq Business Alliance. The alliance, initially named the U.S.-Iraq Business Council, was authorized by the Department of the Treasury in June 2002 when the Pentagon was, quote, trying to figure out how this thing needed to go in a post-war rebuilding effort, unquote. The date again, June 2002. The Pentagon was already trying to figure out how this thing would go in a post-war rebuilding effort, even though, of course, we were assured repeatedly that President Bush didn't make his decision to go to war until after the Super Bowl, at the very least. I think, something like that. From the Telegraph, a conservative British newspaper, before the war, the Oro family ran a popular entertainment empire serving alcohol in their restaurants and shops. Now, an Islamic fatwa declares that no one should trade in alcohol on pain of death. The big casino and dance hall that was once the flagship of the family's property portfolio has been taken over by bearded men who plan to turn it into the town's premier mosque. 50 years I was working with drink, and now I have nothing, says David Yunan Oro, the 70-year-old patriarch. They drink like donkeys here. Business was good. I had a lot of restaurants and shops. Now my family tells me they want to kill me for keeping them here in this place. A lot of bitterness I'm hearing. I'm hearing bitterness. 19 people share the Oro small house. They still beg him. We had a very good situation until the fundamentalists began to appear, and we were affected, says his son-in-law, Roger William. They changed the idea of Christians among the people, and from then on we have suffered. Because America and Britain are Christian countries, they blame us for the war. We're terrified. We really don't know what the future will hold. Think Brits there until 2014 is what the future will hold. They chatter in Assyrian, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. They talk in Assyrian. So maybe they can understand Mel Gibson's new movie. Also from a British newspaper, pointing out that Tony Blair, at least, and to a lesser extent, the administration of the United States, have defended, in retrospect, the war on humanitarian grounds. He was a tyrant. He was a mean, nasty tyrant. And so, would you rather have him in office? Would you rather he still be there? That's the new line. Would you? Are the Democrats really saying they'd rather have Saddam Hussein in power? So, who else is bad? Well, as I said on this broadcast maybe a year ago, if you really take the criteria at face value, somebody who harbors terrorists, has threatened his neighbors, and has weapons of mass destruction, man, you should be going after Pakistan. But now, here's a British newspaper, The Guardian, kind of liberal-leaning, reporting on another one of our allies, Uzbekistan. There are over 6,000 political and religious prisoners in Uzbekistan. Every year, some of them are tortured to death. Sometimes the policemen or intelligence agents simply break their fingers, their ribs, and then their skulls with hammers, or stab them with screwdrivers. Hey, must be a true value store there. Or rip off bits of skin and flesh with pliers, or drive needles under their fingernails, or leave them standing for 2 weeks up to their knees in freezing water. Sometimes a little more invention is involved. The body of one prisoner was delivered to his relatives last year with a curious red tide mark around the middle of his torso. He'd been boiled to death. His crime, practicing his religion. Islam Karimov, the president, learned his politics in the Soviet Union. An Islamist terrorist network has been operating in his country. Anyone who worships privately, who does not praise the president during his prayers, or joins an organization which has not been approved by the state, can be imprisoned. Political dissidents, human rights activists, and homosexuals receive the same treatment. But it's seen by the U.S. government as a key asset, as Iraq once was under Saddam Hussein. Since 1999, U.S. Special Forces have been training Karimov's soldiers. In October 2001, he gave the United States permission to use his country as an airbase for the war against the Taliban. The U.S. has no intention of moving out. He's one of our guys now, ladies and gentlemen. Nice people doing nice things. That's the slogan. 6 months after he spoke on an aircraft carrier deck under a banner proclaiming mission accomplished, President Bush disavowed any connection with that message. Later, the White House changed its story and said there was a link. When it was brought up again Tuesday in a news conference, Mr. Bush said the mission accomplished sign, of course, was put up by the members of the USS Abraham Lincoln, saying that their mission was accomplished. I knew it was attributed somehow to some ingenious advancement from my staff. They weren't that ingenious, by the way, unquote, President Bush, using a three-syllable word. That explanation hadn't surfaced during months of questions to White House officials about the banner. After the news conference, a White House spokeswoman said the Lincoln's crew asked the White House to have the sign made. The White House asked a private vendor to produce the sign. Hey, that's privatization. And the crew put it up. Later, she said she did not know who paid for the sign. Later, a Pentagon spokesman called the Associated Press to reiterate the banner was the crew's idea. Despite initial claims that the ship was too far out to sea for a helicopter landing, forcing the president to use a jet, it was actually within a helicopter range. In addition, Pentagon officials said after the president's speech, the ship waited offshore for hours while he slept, rather than heading into port after its 10-month voyage. News, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, and speaking of conservatives, there were rumors that Dennis Miller was going to be running for a senator seat in California. Republicans were supposedly interested in Dennis Miller. Comedian turned Fox commentator running for senator in California. This week it was announced instead he's running for Geraldo. CNBC has given him Geraldo Rivera's former 9 p.m. East Coast time slot to yak it up. Maybe with lawyers, maybe just with fellow conservatives. Anyway, we now know what he's running for. Okay, it's time for something we haven't done in a while. Tales, ladies and gentlemen, of airport security. Because I've been going through so many airports, I could tell them myself, but why when I have listeners? Write me. It's a copyrighted feature. Yes, it is. Dear Harry, I recently traveled from Salt Lake City to Biloxi, Mississippi. It is pronounced Biloxi, not Biloxi. As I walked through the security... That's me talking. Well, of course it's me talking, but I'm not reading it when I discuss the pronunciation of Biloxi. As I walked through the security gates back to the letter at the Salt Lake International Airport, the buzzer went off. I was asked to step aside, take my shoes off, and wait for a female security guard to search me. This has happened numerous times before, so I didn't think twice about it. The female security guard wanded me across legs, arms, and torso. When the wand would buzz, she would pat me down to ensure everything was okay. Every time the wand swept past my breasts, the wand would buzz. She sort of felt me up, if you'll excuse my language, a few times, and I told her I was wearing an underwire bra. With one last probing feel, she was able to determine I was telling the truth. The last area of extreme interest was my lower abdomen. I was asked to unbuckle my belt, unbutton my shoes, and open them to the top of the zipper. She then put her hand under my pants. Finally, the embarrassing pat-down was complete, and I was allowed to pass through the gate to proceed to my boarding terminal. Later, in flight, I was digging in my purse for some lipstick. Lo and behold, what should I find in my purse but something I use in my job as a supervisor of a department store restocking team. A box cutter. Dear Harry, here's my story from a Sacramento to Los Angeles flight I took last week. At the entrance to the security checkpoint, I went through my ritual undressing, removing my belt with metal clasp, my metal watch and watch band, keys, coins, etc. I was wearing what I call my airport shoes, old tennis shoes without metal that don't set off the alarm. After the first inspector put my hand carry-ons onto the X-ray machine belt, he said, "I recommend you put your shoes through, too." I replied it wasn't necessary since I knew the tennis shoes didn't contain metal. My goodness. Well, it's enough of that. It was thrilling, but I'll continue with the story. The inspector ever so gently shook his head to and fro and made a soft clicking sound with his tongue. I turned to my right and approached the walk-through magnetometer. The inspector on the freedom side of the machine looked at my tennis shoe encased feet and said, quote, "I recommend you put the shoes on the belt," unquote. Again, I said I knew these were metal-free shoes. He mumbled a weak okay and signaled me to walk through the machine. No bells, no buzzers, no flashing lights yet. As soon as I was through, the inspector crisply issued the dreaded words, "Go there and wait for a hand search," while pointing me to the roped-off penalty box just a few feet away. My bags were grabbed off the X-ray belt. I was ordered to sit down in the hand inspection area. The first words out of the inspector's mouth were, "Please take off your shoes so we can put them through the X-ray." Off came my now suspicious shoes, and once safely in the gray plastic bin, they rushed them to the X-ray for the close scrutiny I denied them before. As I was being wanded while standing on the black rubberized inspection mat with the odd-shaped white shoe outlines, I said, "If you just told me to take off my shoes and put them through the X-ray, I would have, but you guys said it was only a recommendation." The inspector smiled a sad smile and said that before I entered the magnetometer, they didn't have the authority to order me to remove my shoes, but once past that barrier, they did. Since I'm writing this email, you'll have figured out that I survived the hand search and made it onto the plane to my destination. Next time the inspectors make a recommendation that I do something, I'll just say yes, sir. Sans music, but with words, tales of airport security, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, news about the digital wonderland. I'm over here in England where everything's digital, or a lot is digital already. I was watching CNN International here in the studio where I'm doing my show, you know, the good CNN. And it's obviously being delivered digitally because it's out of sync. Now, 50 years of television we had where the sound and the picture arrived simultaneously. Suddenly, a big step forward. Now, it's out of sync. But better yet, I mentioned on this broadcast last week or the week before, I forget who's taking notes, that the Fox Network broadcast of the World Series was festooned with these sound effects every time they went into a slow-mo or a replay. A listener wrote and said, well, I outsmarted that. I turned down the TV sound and turned up the radio. And I thought, okay, old-fashioned but effective. And then another listener wrote to say, I tried that too. Didn't work because the radio audio reached me, that is to say, the description of the radio reached me several seconds before the picture of the same event arrived on the television. Because you see, ladies and gentlemen, it takes a little time to digitize the picture and to undigitize it and then to maybe redigitize it again when it arrives at your place or maybe re-undigitize it. So once we enter the digital wonderland, ain't nothing live anymore. The FCC this week, by the way, is fixing to adopt rules to block the swapping of high-definition TV signals over the Internet. New rules involve placing a broadcast flag on programming that would prevent you from doing stuff with it. Consumer groups and some consumer electronic software and computer manufacturers say it's not effective as a solution because if you get the show in analog, you could just download it into analog and then recopy it into digital, and then up it goes on the Internet. They've also raised other concerns, maybe more interesting to you and me, that it would render tens of millions of digital media players, DVD players, and recorders that we've already bought obsolete. It's the digital wonderland, ladies and gentlemen. Enjoy.
One more time. They say that what you give, you just can't take away.
This is Le Show from London, England. Now news of the Murdoch Empire. Six men are... Sky TV is the British satellite pay TV service. Features, among other attractive programming, The Simpsons. And it's a third owned, but basically controlled by Rupert Murdoch. And he's basically facing a stockholder battle over his current attempts to install his son, James, as the new head of Sky TV. It's in the meantime being sued by six men claiming producers tricked them into kissing a man for a reality show. This is a show that will not make the reality awards, that will not be broadcast. The contestants hope to win $15,000 and a week on a yacht with the sultry brunette of the show. The guys said they were told to impress her by performing macho and romantic acts, or, well, in England, macho. These included intimate massages, caressing and cuddling, holding hands, and kissing, or as they call it here, snogging. The contestants even wrote love poems to the person named Miriam, and a few of them were actually smitten, but they were horrified to learn after 3 weeks of filming that Miriam is a man. He's said to be planning a sex change. Planning. Let's see, Tuesday I'll go to the doctor. All six contestants walked out on There's Something About Miriam as filming ended. Even the winner, selected by Miriam, has refused the cash prize. The contestants have grouped together to sue the producers and try to stop the show from being broadcast. They're taking action against Brighter Pictures, owned by the same people who created Big Brother, claiming conspiracy to commit sexual assault. The group also claims defamation, saying they were made unfairly to look foolish. Yeah, they thought they were going to be dignified on a reality show with a gal, you see. And they're also claiming breach of contract, personal injury in the form of psychological and emotional damage. And apparently she used a pin on her poppy. A source said, this show has totally backfired. Nobody on the show had the faintest idea how badly the guys involved in it would take it. We all just hoped they'd just walk away and get the joke. But the problem is, there isn't a joke. A lot of us were pretty disgusted to have any part in the program once we began to realize what a damaging effect it was going to have on the guys. They're a great bunch of lads. They're like your average bloke next door, and we're just up for a bit of fun. They're terrified of what their mates will think. The Sky advertised for the contestants in an ad that said, are you fit and up for anything and would describe yourself as a sexual magnet? Sky's attorneys said, we've received a letter regarding this program. We'll examine its contents carefully before making any response. Other news of lawsuits in the Murdoch Empire. The story ran around the world this week about The Simpsons, an episode. Matt Groening was on Fresh Air with Terry Gross, and he didn't walk out. But he said after a Simpsons was broadcast last year on Fox that had a fake Fox News Channel ticker that read, among other things, pointless news crawls up 37%, do Democrats cause cancer? Find out at foxnews.com. Rupert Murdoch, terrific dancer, Dow down 5,000 points. Study, 92% of Democrats are gay. JFK posthumously joins Republican Party. Oil slicks found to keep seals young and supple. Okay, Matt Groening said, Fox said they would sue the show, and we called their bluff because we didn't think Rupert Murdoch would pay for Fox to sue itself. We got away with it. But now, Matt continues, Fox has a new rule that we can't do those little fake news crawls because it might confuse the viewers into thinking it's real news, unquote. That would be the War of the Worlds law, wouldn't it? Robert Zimmerman, a spokesman for Fox News Channel, denied the news channel had ever threatened a lawsuit. We are scratching our heads over here, he said. We like the cartoon. We thought it was great. Unquote. Cartoon? And The Simpsons issued a statement saying there was never any issue between the show and Fox News Channel. In the statement released by The Simpsons, the show said, who's the show? Beats me. Quote, Matt was being satirical, and certainly there was never any issue between the show and Fox News. We regret any confusion, ladies and gentlemen. But what if there had been a suit?
Welcome back to Court TV's continuing coverage of the Fox versus Fox trial. I'm Nancy Grace. In our morning session, plaintiff attorney Jerry Spence got some damaging testimony on the record from chief defense witness Rupert Murdoch. Here's a clip of that testimony.
Well, and isn't it true, Mr. Murdoch, that your very same company, Fox, that owns this so-called news network...
Your Honor, objection.
Sustained. Please rephrase the question.
Thank you, Judge Ito. That owns this news network, your very same company, pays great untold sums of money to put The Simpsons on your Fox network in the first place?
You may answer the question.
Well, no, I wouldn't say great untold sums, not at all. As a matter of fact, I think as a matter of company policy, we try very hard to pay as little as...
Well, I think you've answered my question, sir.
Defense Attorney F. Lee Bailey, in his first high-profile case since his re-embarment, tried to get Judge Lutz Ito to allow Murdoch to finish his answer. It seemed like the witness was awfully eager to emphasize that he doesn't pay very much money to put The Simpsons on his network, but that testimony was ruled irrelevant just before lunch recess. Now we're back for the afternoon sessions. Judge Ito, in his first high-profile case in almost a decade, has gaveled the court to order, and let's join Plaintiff Attorney Jerry Spence in good progress.
It would seem to any reasonable person that if you've got some major kind of financial investment in this cartoon show...
Your Honor, objection. We've been through this.
Counsel is instructed to desist from any more use of the derogatory term. We've discussed this in chambers.
Well, I'm sorry, Judge, but as I told you in chambers back up in Wyoming, we don't think of cartoon as a derogatory term, but... All right, you've got a major investment in this animated series.
Again, I wouldn't say major.
Well, wouldn't you then be inclined by your own financial interest to maybe, just maybe, not defend the good name of your news network as much as you otherwise might?
May I answer?
You may.
All right, first of all, the fact that I brought this action against myself, I would say, is proof enough to the average man that I do care about my news network's good name. I mean, you've sworn me in here as an unfriendly witness for the defense. Even though I'm paying your attorney fees, I would think that alone would
Your Honor, move to strike. Source of my attorney fees is irrelevant and potentially prejudicial to the jury.
Sustain, the witness is warned.
Thank you.
Your Honor, is my learned attorney now saying that prejudicial is a bad thing? If so, query how he can in good conscience continue to represent the Fox News Channel in this case. In fact, this whole line of questioning seems totally out of whack. And in your honor, I would suggest it indicates that plaintiff's attorney is not acting in accord with my instructions, but rather those of my son James and...
Move to strike. The witness himself appointed his son to replace him as lead plaintiff. That horse has long ago got out of the barn and is halfway to town.
It's the court's opinion that this whole matter would best be handled in a client-lawyer-son discussion after the court is adjourned.
Your Honor, if I may...
The court hates to see this get out of hand, but Mr. Bailey...
Thank you. What my learned opposite number is arguing through his question is an absurdity. Surely if his client wasn't serious about protecting the reputation and hence the consequent revenue flow of his news operation, he would not be investing in attorney services that carry the notably lofty price tag attached to the ministrations of my esteemed counterpart in the buckskin. Friend, oppose the motion to strike.
Well, Your Honor, point of privilege here. Mm-hmm. This happens to be lambskin.
All right. The court is concerned about the potential circus aspect of this case, especially with the presence of so many elephants on the witness list, but...
Your Honor, if I may...
Counsel is urged to advise his client that his father is on the stand.
Your Honor, I've utilized supreme effortation in this regard.
You try.
How do you think I feel?
Well, let's remind the witness that I'm asking the question.
Right. Your Honor, request permission to be sworn in to testify at this point.
Well, it's highly unusual to have two witnesses testifying under oath at the same time. But sure.
Well, once again, Judge Ito seems to be on the verge of letting this trial get away from him. Georgetown Law Professor Jonathan Turley, mm-hmm. is that the way you see it?
Nancy, I seriously think Judge Ito is flirting here, not only with reversible error, but also with very bad courtroom drama.
James Murdoch has been sworn in. Let's go back to the live proceedings.
And even though I was supposed to be running the British satellite operation at this point, had not the stockholders over there rebelled, I think that my father, in naming me his proxy as the plaintiff in this case, was in fact trying to act out a very Shakespearean or Oedipal, I mean, I don't know exactly. I was educated in this country, but some kind of very primal drama.
Your Honor, I believe I'm still under oath as well.
You are?
Judge, is there a question pending here?
I believe it was about the investment in the Simpsons outweighing...
Yes.
All right. Now, I mean, if I didn't care about the reputation and good name of the Fox News Channel, would I have allowed them to give Ollie North his own show? I mean, substitute plaintiff in chief and his attorney would have this court believe that a show that's drawn in Korea and voiced by nameless seat fillers is worth as much to News Corporation as a keystone in a well-planned effort to control what the world thinks. I maintain those are the bleedings of an ungrateful son who was without good cause jealous of his more successful older brother.
Well, is that a yes or a no?
I know I should have testified in the divorce proceedings.
Your Honor, I must object. It's my client's good name to be totally unprotected from such rampant abnegation.
Counsel, I have to say that I really don't know. We'll take a 10-minute recess while I look in the dictionary.
Georgetown Law Professor Jonathan Turley thought we would go longer before the break, so he's indisposed. I'm Nancy Grace, and Court TV's continuing coverage of Murdoch versus Murdoch will continue right after this brief continuation.
Sister, small like my dad, good like my mama. It's money that I love. It's money that I love. They say that money can't buy love in this world. Get your half pound of cocaine, 19-year-old girl, big long limousine on hot September night. Now that may not be love, but it is all right. Worry anymore. Used to worry
And now, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Waltham, Massachusetts, editors for The Justice, the Brandeis University student newspaper, apologized this week to students at a packed Shapiro Student Center for allowing racist material to be published in Tuesday's sports section. "We're appalled about what happened this week in our paper," said editor-in-chief Stephen Heyman. "For this to slip by us is just unacceptable." I can't even read on the air what they printed. But it was a slam at Dusty Baker, the manager of the Chicago Cubs. And they apologize. Chung-doo-un, Seoul, Korea's vice mayor for political affairs, came under fire for allegedly sexually harassing a female journalist who reports on his office during a party in a bar near the Seoul Metropolitan Government in central Seoul. He allegedly hugged the reporter from the back while other participants were engaging in talks, said the reporter, who refused to identify herself. "I really don't remember," Chung told reporters after receiving a protest from her fellow reporters covering the city government. "I might have done something wrong under the influence of liquor. I really apologize for causing a stir." Wasn't it Korea where the guy apologized last week for urinating while drunk? Members of the... All right. Michigan State Council of Students with Disabilities were offended when a Michigan State's mascot, Sparty, was seen wandering through the student union with a white cane and a referee's jersey. The stunt was intended to be the blind ref gag, according to coordinators for the Student Alumni Foundation, a piece that would go into a yearly mascot competition video. "The statement they were making was about a referee," said their advisor. They felt badly afterwards, and they apologized. Clear Channel has apologized. The Mammoth Radio Broadcasting Corporation owns 1,200 stations around the country. Owns stations in Cleveland, Houston, and Raleigh, North Carolina, where morning show hosts suggested motorists blast horns at bicyclists or throw bottles at them or hit them with open car doors or speed past them and then hit the brakes in front of them. The company won't release transcripts or tapes of the broadcast, but the three stations apologized on the air, and Clear Channel donated $10,000 to promote bicycle safety. That's the trouble, those bicyclists aren't safe enough. The head of the U.S. Bureau of Land Management has apologized to her 10,000 employees for her criticism in Nevada a week ago. She criticized agency bureaucrats in the Clinton administration. She said in an email letter addressed to all BLM employees that she apologizes for any embarrassment they or their families may have experienced, because she said in a speech at an oil and gas industry conference in Reno that she was demanding more accountability of her field managers to try to rein in an agency that lacked discipline under the Clinton administration. Lost some accountability, did a lot of freelancing. She said now she owes her employees an explanation and an apology. She lauded the professionalism and dedication of her workforce in her prepared comments. She told her workers that she was deeply sorry that her comments were interpreted and reported as criticism of all BLM employees. Maryland Governor Robert Ehrlich announced he would grant a pardon to a man who served 27 years in prison before his murder conviction was overturned 2 years ago. It was a crime he did not commit. "I talked to him today," said the governor. "I apologized to him, although words were very difficult to come by." He also said the man, Michael Austin, should get some compensation from the state for the years he spent in prison, but said he doesn't have a figure in mind. Police in Alexandria, Louisiana, have apologized to the Welch family of Alexandria for a mistaken drugs raid on their house, part of the Alexandria Narcotics Winter Sweep. Sweeps Week in Alexandria. Organizers of a charity basketball game between Algonquin Lake and the Hills Police and Fire Department apologized for accidentally including a pornographic website on informational pamphlets distributed at the game. Any more? I think, yes. Finally, A German parliamentarian has apologized for remarks that appeared to compare Jews during the Bolshevik Revolution. All right. To Nazis in World War II. Ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Temperamental British CD machines, ladies and gentlemen, are honed to the finest specifications. But that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. Across the great continental sweep of North America via Sirius satellite radio, and around the world via the internet at two locations, whenever you want it, harryshear.com and kcrw.com. And it would be just like the U.S. staying until 2014 in Iraq, along with the Brits, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? All righty. Thank you very much. Uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Le Show playlists usually available at harryshearer.com. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to Mark Woodhouse at Capital Radio in central London for making today's show audible. Fingers are too long. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.